Welcome to Optimistic Voices, a podcast of helping children worldwide. We help children worldwide by strengthening and empowering families and communities. This podcast is for people interested in deep conversations with thought leaders in the fields of child welfare, global health, and international missions.
Hi, and welcome to the Optimistic Voices podcast. I'm your host, Yasmin Vaughn. In today's episode, I am with Dr. Aruna Stevens, and we will be talking about health disparities with regards to resources, both human and physical resources, particularly within Sierra Leone, but also within the greater context of health disparities. So let's begin like we usually do, talking a little bit about the background on what are health disparities. Well, according to the CDC, health disparities are preventable differences in the burden of disease, injury, or violence, or opportunities to achieve optimal health that are experienced by socially disadvantaged populations. So in order to be called a health disparity, it's something that is preventable, something that divides people that shouldn't have to divide people based on resources, based on access, based on a lot of different things. So as I said, today with me, we have Dr. Aruna Stevens with us. Dr. Stevens is the chief medical officer at Mercy Hospital in Bow, Sierra Leone. He is a graduate of the College of Medicine and Allied Health Sciences from the University of Sierra Leone. And since joining the staff at Mercy Hospital, he has transformed the hospital into one of the top medical facilities in Bow, with over 10,000 patients treated every year by its staff. Dr. Stevens, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you.
So let's start by you telling us a little bit about your experience. How long have you been a doctor?
Oh, from graduation to now, this is my fifth year working as a medical doctor. I worked initially at the University of Sierra Leone Teaching Hospital Complex in Freetown, which is the main referral hospital in Sierra Leone, before joining the amazing staff of Mercy Hospital in Bow since March 2020.
Wonderful. We're so glad to have you. And I understand that there's a lot of differences between your work at Mercy and your work at this hospital in Freetown, which is one of the top medical facilities in the country. So I hope we'll talk a little bit more about that. So I invited Dr. Stevens on this show to talk with us about some of the experiences he has I actually gave him the option. What do you want to talk about on our podcast? What is something that you think that people generally should know about the work that has to be done in a lot of low-income countries? And he said the most important thing to talk about is health disparities. So Dr. Stevens, let's begin with talking about why do problems exist? Why are there disparities in health?
Starting with, initially after graduation, I only worked at Connaught Hospital, which was the primary referral hospital in Sierra Leone. And moving within Africa, Ghana and other places, I saw so much differences in health disparities, as well as recently I worked with the Medical University of South Carolina, and I saw the huge impact in terms of resources. So back to the question that you asked, why are these health disparities? It's just based on the resources we have. It varies right across the world. For every nation, there is disparity within Sierra Leone. From living in a rural community and living in Freetown, there's a great health disparity. Living in Sierra Leone and living in other places in West Africa, there is a great health disparity. Living in Africa and comparatively to Europe and America is quite different. So based on the region where you find yourself, we have different health disparities. And starting with this, we have problems with health systems, problems with human resources, problems with access to institutions, and also the living standard of people living within the location.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought up the point about that there's disparities not just within or between nations, such as between the United States and Sierra Leone, but there's disparities even within nations of rural versus urban healthcare access, or depending on your economic ability, even if you live in an urban area, being able to pay for and afford services. So tell us a little bit more about some of these problems.
President Obama mentioned that Africa does not need stronger men. Africa needs a stronger institutions. So in Sierra Leone, there are many, many, many health policies. In 2010, the Free Healthcare Initiative started that all pregnant women and lactating mothers should get free healthcare services at all public hospitals. And children below the age of 5 years should get free healthcare services. This is a very welcoming statement. This is a very laudable statement. People will support this idea from our politicians, but we do not have the institutions to support this. We do not have the resources to support this. We do not have the human resources to support this. We do not have the place to support this goal. So these and many other problems created the need for us to look into the building up better health system in particular places like tropical Africa, like Sierra Leone.
Yeah. We've discussed on some of our previous episodes this issue of dealing with women and children, how that is a very important issue within the realm of global health. And the reason that it is so important is that women and children are among the most vulnerable sets of a population. And a healthcare system, its ability to be strong is reflected in its ability to care for its most vulnerable people. So, like you were saying, this policy in Sierra Leone of free healthcare for women and children is a great idea, but it needs a systems approach to support it.
Yes.
Yeah. What are some other issues that you've seen in your work so far?
There are so many other issues in my practice as a clinician. For instance, back to the problems with the women and pregnant women and children under 5 years, as they are the most vulnerable population. So now the Free Healthcare Initiative started. So supplies are constantly depleted. Demands, supplies necessarily do not meet the demands of the people. So in a hospital where I work, which is the Presidente Matana Christian Hospital, has the capacity to provide care for all pregnant women. But this hospital serves almost all urban Freetown and rural Freetown. Mm-hmm. Most often, we do not have beds to meet the demands of our patients. Serving as a clinician in that hospital, you can be depleted of your energy. Mm. So you can be on calls for 48 hours. We have done in 24 hours 21 cesarean sections.
Wow.
In a team of only 5 medical doctors. So that is so much a burden on healthcare workers. Few days ago, I was with few residents and a well-established medical university in the United States. And they had to do only 3 cesarean sections and they said they are tired. Mm-hmm. And I saw other clinicians have to see only 7 patients per day. In my daily outpatient, I get to see like 20 to 25 patients every day. So that is a huge burden on healthcare resources, on health, or even the human resources. The government pays most of the fees for medical doctors in Sierra Leone, but 80% to 90% of the graduates will have to leave Sierra Leone and look for job in other places. So training, they have invested so much, but they cannot retain the people they have trained.
Yeah.
In early August, there was a nationwide medical doctor strike in Sierra Leone. All doctors have to stay home because of salaries. So many, many doctors have left the shores of Sierra Leone because they cannot get what they deserve. So they are looking for better, greener pastures in other places. So if government could retain those healthcare workers and also train more healthcare workers, this is a sustainable way to build health system and
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Thank you for sharing that illustration. 21 cesarean sections in 24 hours is an immeasurable burden on a healthcare system and on its staff. Thank you for highlighting that it's not just access to resources and supplies, you know, making sure you have gloves and exam materials and things, but the stress that it places on physicians and practitioners and other clinicians in Sierra Leone to be able to put out at this level is immeasurable. We talked a little bit about patients' ability to pay for services. And we discussed how in Sierra Leone, mothers and children have the ability to access care, but not necessarily and have it for free. But that still places a huge burden on the healthcare system. But that doesn't, and it also doesn't cover patients who are not women and children. So can we talk a little bit about accessing healthcare for other groups and the ability to pay for it?
Oh, yes. Being in Sierra Leone, and I always tell my audience that surviving in Sierra Leone until the age of 50 years or any age you are above 5 years, you are very, very, very lucky. So most kids do not get to see their fifth birthday because of disease conditions and poor health systems. And most of the cause of death in these kids are preventable. But what is more devastating is the access of healthcare. In other systems and in other places, there is health insurance. In Sierra Leone, there is no health insurance. And there is no emergency care for patients. So it means when you get to the hospital, you have to pay from your pocket. And when you pay, you get treatment. So if you collapse on the street, you're unconscious, you come to the hospital. In 50% of the hospitals in Sierra Leone, you may die because there's nobody to pay for you and you may not survive. Some of the treatment that you may need, assume you have hypoglycemia, you may need like a glucose bolus. It costs less than $10 or $2. Many people have lost their lives because of emergency medical care in places like Sierra Leone. Yes, there is a declaration by the Obama initiative that everybody that comes to the emergency unit or emergency room in the US that should be careful. In our place, it's not like that. People have to pay from their pocket. Many patients come to the hospital only when they are really, really, really sick because they are afraid of the burden of paying the cost of medical care. Some of them do not have enough money to put food on their tables. Some of them do not have money to have clothes. So going to the hospital, they have to pay registration, consultation, and investigation. So they rather go to the pharmacy and just get a drug and go back home. So when they come to the hospital, it means as a matter of urgent need, and it's very, very serious. But surprisingly for them, when they come to the hospital, the cost is very expensive. And also, most of the investigations that needs to be done for these patients are not available. In most places, you can only make diagnosis with there is no complete blood count. You only can use the HP, or you can do your clinical examinations to do blood transfusion. You cannot do liver function test. You cannot do kidney function test. Not talk of CT scan or chest X-ray. These are all impossible in most of the hospitals or these district healthcare hospitals within Sierra Leone. So life in Sierra Leone, people only pray to get malaria and that can be resolved. But anything beyond that is a big problem.
Yeah, you highlight a lot of issues within that. I want to share with our audience some of the statistics about Sierra Leone. So Sierra Leone has the third highest maternal mortality rate in the world and currently the highest infant mortality rate as of 2020. And if you listen to our child mortality episode, you'll hear some of the reasons behind that. And as Dr. Stevens shared, many of these things are preventable. You also shared the high cost burden for patients in Sierra Leone. 90% of patients have to pay out of pocket to access healthcare because there is no health insurance scheme in Sierra Leone. And most of these communities do not have the income to support this. So the research shows that $34 is spent out of pocket a year on healthcare in Sierra Leone. And while $34 doesn't seem like a lot, we're talking about a population where half of the people make less than a dollar a day. So accessing healthcare could bankrupt a family who's trying to receive it. You also highlighted that if you don't have the ability to pay at the time, you do not receive services, which is a huge and terrifying thing for those who are ill. People only come to the hospital when they are very, very sick and they realize that medication that they've received is not working. And then there is not the ability to get access to the treatment that's needed. So if I'm assuming, you know, if, for instance, if a patient comes in with cancer, they've not been feeling well for some time, but maybe they thought it was just nothing. And then they come in and it's suddenly stage 3 or 4 and there's not access to be able to treat them.
So yes, palliative care, as you mentioned, cancer is a big problem. So 2 months ago, a 25-year-old girl had a breast cancer and she came in at the third stage when the cancer has already spread. So making the diagnosis is a big problem. And also, if the diagnosis is made, how can you provide care for these patients? How can you, when there is no oncologist within the country, when oncology drugs are not readily available, when oncology diagnostic tools are not readily available? So certain disease conditions you have in Sierra Leone is possibly a death sentence. If you have a kidney failure, there is only one dialysis unit in the, within the country and it's private. It costs $100 to get a one session of dialysis. Most patients with renal disease need at least 3 sessions of dialysis. So it costs like $300 for a week to survive. So for a population that earns like less than $1 for a day, how can you possibly survive that? So certain disease conditions you get within Sierra Leone is a death sentence for you. You cannot make it.
With treatments that are, with conditions that are treatable in other parts of the world.
So yes, these are conditions that are treatable. These are conditions that are, in other places, they are so much specialized that they can get transplant done for these patients. Yes, but we cannot. Mm-hmm. We cannot even do the preliminary care, the preliminary investigations that are needed for these patients. Even to make the diagnosis is a problem. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. But the very few who has money, the politically affiliated, have portions of our budget that advocate for treatment overseas. Mm-hmm. So most of them, we have their regular medical checks, with using resources from the coffers of Sierra Leone, and they can come to places and get regular medical check.
Mm. So again, talking about disparities even within the nation. Yeah. You also mentioned, this reminds me of a conversation that we've previously had about the split between infectious and chronic diseases in Sierra Leone, how chronic diseases are on the rise in this country. Would you like to add more to that?
So yes, death in Sierra Leone is mostly not from infectious disease point. Although we have malaria as the leading cause of death in Sierra Leone. However, if you look at the life expectancy, which is 54.7 years, most of the people that die earlier than this, or people that die before their 60th birthday, most of them have this non-communicable disease like diabetes, hypertension. These are conditions that can be managed. These are conditions that other places have better treatment options for. Yes. How can you possibly make a diagnosis of an acute myocardial infarction when there is no EKG machine in your facility?
Right.
How can somebody make a diagnosis of a pulmonary embolism or a pneumothorax when there is no chest x-ray. So, in cases like this, this patient will obviously die. They may die and nothing prevents them.
Yeah.
I've seen
cases where people had gone to the hospital and they see limited resources and people prefer religious houses than hospital. They rather take their patient to pastor to pray than to go to the hospital. Because with prayer, they are, may have faith that things may be changed. But at the hospital, they know they can get some of the cure, but there are no resources. So people choose religious houses over hospital many times.
Wow. Speaking of the ability to access care, you know, not having the treatment modalities to do transplants, newer first-line antibiotics, things like this, affecting people's ability to seek healthcare facilities. Do you think many people are suspicious? Or I know that this was a big issue during Ebola of people being afraid to take family members to the hospital because they took them there, they weren't allowed to see them, and then their family member never came home.
So education in Sierra Leone is a problem. So, and exposition also is a problem within Sierra Leone. It is very difficult to get messages across. So practicing here as if in the United States as a clinician is much more better because most of your patient who comes to you knows a lot about their medical conditions, have read a lot, and they can even call the names of the drugs that they are using. And some of them knows a lot. On the other hand, we have barriers in communication in Sierra Leone. We have, it's a nation with 16 ethnic groups. About 80% of the people can speak Creole and very few cannot speak Creole at all. So there's a barrier of communication. So with very poor education and illiteracy, interventions like vaccines are seen as a threat to many people. People see vaccines like, for example, during the Ebola, people thought that the vaccines were bad control pills, or bad controls, medications that are given to people to control population. People have different beliefs that they have different beliefs, the hypothesis that the Ebola was man-made. So any other drug coming in is a continuation of the disease condition, just even with COVID. Mm. So it is very difficult to get them use some of the interventions we have. However, these barriers have been broken. Yes, we have social mobilizers. We have community healthcare workers. These are not skilled. They are not skilled healthcare workers. They are not trained healthcare workers. But these are people who worked within a community. Like, they have a small knowledge in medicine, but they are living within a community. So you can train them and you can communicate through them. So having somebody within your community and talking to them about these interventions, that is very, very helpful.
I'm glad you brought that up, the use of community health workers as a means of spreading information. This, of course, is something that I think many people understand, which is that these health disparities are usually have outside causes. Things like education, illiteracy, building trust within a healthcare system has an immeasurable impact on getting people to have good health-seeking behavior, knowing when to come to the hospital, knowing when there's something serious going on that needs to be handled. And their ability to trust with their physician is a huge issue as well. We talked a little bit about funding for healthcare systems, not having the ability to be sustainable. Can you elaborate a little bit more on the sustainability issue?
So funding for health in Sierra Leone is another problem. So, in normal life, we have our wants and our needs. And certain things within a nation should be top priority, like health, education, and food security. These are very, very important. However, most of our leaders in preparing our yearly budget have priorities over some of these things. So health budget it's not lucrative. It's not very attractive compared to other means. Yes, most politicians will prefer making roads and building bridges. This will get them to power than building hospitals. Yes. So very few resources are allocated to health. But on the other hand, as a healthcare worker, it is very, very painful to see a patient dying from condition that is preventable. Whilst people are moving out of the country to get healthcare services in other places, which is very, very more expensive. So for instance, a member of parliament in Sierra Leone chronic kidney disease, most of them will be flown to other places and get a check and get dialysis done or get a kidney transplant and return back home. Think about that cost. It will cost over $20,000 or more, or even $50,000 to get this one patient treated. But with that amount of money, that can bring us about 3 to 5 dialysis units within a hospital. So it's all about priorities. As I mentioned in my opening statement, that Africa, we do not need strong men. We need a better institutions, a better health policies, a better monitoring and evaluation of our facilities, of our assets. This can be able to help replenish. This can be able to solve the problems that we have with health disparities.
Yeah. Thank you for that. You've brought up quite a few points on solutions to these potential problems of disparities. Having a health insurance scheme to ensure that patients have access to affordable care, training and retaining healthcare workers. You shared that many physicians end up having to leave Sierra Leone because of pay issues. You also mentioned about monitoring and evaluation of healthcare systems. Can you elaborate a bit more on that one?
Oh, yes. Okay, monitoring and evaluation. So for instance, supplies are given on quarterly basis to different places, different health units. Some of these supplies should be monitored. So for instance, if you give like 60 bags of or 60 boxes of normal saline to the healthcare unit at any place for pregnant women, there should be systems that will monitor how many women actually benefited and how many times these drugs were used. Yes. So most often, the drugs have been given, but the demands of the patients outweighs the number of supplies that have been given. So the free healthcare is there, but the resources are not there. So often there are problems with the healthcare workers and the patients in the community. So the supply chain is a problem. There's a problem with the supply chain. There is a problem with the monitoring and evaluation of the resources we have. And if not only with the resources, with even the human resources also, because having all the doctors within Freetown is a problem. If you go to Connaught Hospital or most of the hospitals, you can see like 20 to 50 doctors or in a team, they have 5 medical teams. One medical team can get like 15 doctors. Yes, but it's good because they are in training. They have residents, they have health officers, so different forms of medical doctors. However, some of these resources, some of the human resources they have in these tertiary hospitals can be distributed evenly to other places, and that can be very helpful.
Yeah, so the healthcare system is very centralized. Most of the good healthcare facilities are in urban areas, and rural areas usually only have what are called peripheral health units, which are very small little clinics, usually staffed maybe by a midwife if they're lucky.
Or a community health assistant.
Yeah.
Or a community health officer.
Yeah, so very low level trained, but not super well-trained people staffing these facilities. So dispersing of the medical care within Sierra Leone, making sure it's evenly distributed, is also a big challenge. Let's talk a little bit more about some other potential solutions. At Helping Children Worldwide, we think a lot about teamwork. We actually call it radical collaboration. Because we believe that through radically collaborating, saying, you know, this is the work that we are doing, what is the work that you're doing, how can we all work together towards the same goal, is something that's really important to us. How do you see the role of teamwork play in fixing health disparities?
So teamwork is very important. No man can practice medicine in isolation. So even in, you have to work in team. So in the morning, I depend on the non-medical staff to help with cleaning of the hospital, because so to prevent nosocomial infections that our patient may get in the hospital. So even the non-clinical staff are very, very important. So they are part of a team. Then also, we also depend on the registrar and all the finance officers in the hospital. These are non-clinical staff within the hospital, but they are great members of the team. So they are playing vital role. The clinical staff, I cannot make diagnosis without the lab working. Mm-hmm. I cannot do all the administrations of the drugs without the nurses properly documenting and administering the drugs. So teamwork and collaborating is very, very important. But that is just within a hospital. So if we take a look at teamwork on a global scale, it's more important. For instance, there are many, many agencies, many, many organizations that are working towards the universal health coverage or providing quality health care within places in Africa and other places across the world, or within Sierra Leone. But most of these organizations have the same goal, have the same vision, and they are using the same resources. It is very important that these organizations work together as team, so that each intervention that they give in a place cannot be repeated. Mm-hmm. So for instance, for example, Mercy Hospital has an outreach program that provides care to about 55 villages around Sierra Leone. There is another organization like the Rural Healthcare Initiative that provide care to maternal healthcare patients. So if Mercy goes to this village, RHCI should go to the village. We are not saying that they should not go to the village. It's very important that they go to the village. But the interventions given should not be the same. Or they must work as a team. These two organizations or teams can work together and see what is really the need of these people. And what if somebody is doing this, providing care and monitoring the patients, you can do something else. So in this way, we can actually disperse our resources. We can actually allocate the resources to where it's more, that is needed the most. So teamwork is very, very important for every health system.
Yeah, making sure that there's no duplication of efforts.
Yes.
And that you're working together. What about teamwork between organizations that are external to Sierra Leone or external to your area and with local staff or even with the Ministry of Health?
So that is another big problem also. So most often, there is a national healthcare budget across all districts. So most of the interventions that are provided by this goodwill organization is already in our budget. So for instance, in a district health management team, there is an institutional unit that is in charge for providing nutrition. UNICEF and other organizations are sending all funding related to malnutrition through this unit, through the district health management team. So if these district hospitals are not working with the other organizations, you may be duplicating the effort of a ministry, or the ministry may not work. And there are people there out there doing the malnutrition management for our patients. So it's very important that every intervention at every district level or national level, the teams must meet and collaborate and galvanize their goals. What is the aim? What are our objective? And so that they cannot duplicate the resources, they cannot duplicate the activities. And so that there are many other places that will not get these resources if they do not work as a team.
Yeah. Well, thank you. We like to end all of our podcast episodes. Well, first, again, let me thank you for joining us here today. What you guys do not know is that Dr. Stevens is actually physically here in front of me. A lot of our podcast episodes we film across continents and time zones and things, but Dr. Stevens has been in the United States with us. He's been at our office for the last couple of weeks, helping us with some of our fundraising, helping us meet with people, and we've been setting up numerous meetings with him to meet with others to carry out this collaboration and teamwork that we've been talking about here today. So thank you, Dr. Stevens, for coming, not coming all the way from Sierra Leone for this episode, but for being here today. And I hope your time in the United States has been very good. We like to close all of our podcast episodes with one question, which is, what are you optimistic about in your work?
I am very pleased with the work I do presently in Bo. Before, I used to work in Freetown. I don't get to see most of the patients I used to treat. But in Bo, it's a small community, about 5,000 to 6,000 people. And I was born in Bo and I grew up in Bo. So I get to see most of the people that I know within my community. And I have services. I have services wherever I go, and people will recognize that, hey, that is Dr. Steven. Yes, many times. So it feels very good, irrespective of what the pay may be or what I may get at work. But as a healthcare worker, I am more pleased to see a patient say thank you and to see a very distressing young woman and she say, hey, thank you, you made me survive. You bring a change in my life, and that makes a difference. So making a difference is what I'm optimistic about.
Service to one's community. That's wonderful. Thank you again, Dr. Stevens. And thank you all for joining us for this episode of Optimistic Voices. It's a big, messy world out there, and there is no shortage of need. But we here at Optimistic Voices believe that with radical courage and radical collaboration, together we can change the world.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe, share it with others, post about it on social media, or leave a rating and review. To catch all the latest from us, you can find us at Helping Children Worldwide on Instagram, LinkedIn, Twitter, and Facebook. #OptimisticVoicesPodcast.